First, I want to begin just with a point of clarity about this passage from Luke. It would be easy for someone to read this story and assume that this leader of the synagogue, who is so indignant that Jesus should not heal on the Sabbath, speaks for all of Judaism. But he does not. Acts of mercy had long been allowed on the Sabbath day. They were understood as not only okay, but as an important part of honoring the God of mercy after whom the Sabbath was formed. This indignant religious leader no more represents all of Judaism than any individual Christian preacher speaks for all of Christianity. So it's important for us to know that as we approach this story. And yet it does tell us something. If not so much about the Jewish religion as a whole, then perhaps about the human condition that when we gather together in those places in public, something in us feels unable to simply be who we are. This woman, bent double for 18 years, unable to stand up straight, relegated to looking at the ground at other people's feet, she represents in many ways all of those who not only are unable to see, but who are unable to be seen, whose appearance makes others look away for some reason, maybe due to illness or circumstances in life. Think of the elderly woman who is dismissed because of her age or because of her creeping memory loss. Think of the homeless person who might come in here to worship and sit on the back pew only to leave after the benediction right away. Think of the young mother trying to wrangle spirited toddlers in the front pew, trying desperately to hold it together while teetering on the edge of tears. Think of the longtime member with bruises on her arms that are covered up with her best clothes, trying to cover the abusive relationship that she is in. Every week, in virtually every sanctuary, there are those who are bent in half by the burdens that they bring to worship. Some may try to cover it up with fancy clothes or with smiles, but their pains are there nonetheless. The miracle of this story in Luke is not simply a matter of healing. Yes, there is the physical cure, the healing, it's there. But before Jesus ever proclaims, "Woman, you are set free from your ailment," the first miracle takes place. Jesus saw her. He didn't simply look at her or notice her. He saw her, and he called her to come to him. I suspect that woman had been coming to that synagogue for years, perhaps before she was ever bent over by this sickness. I imagine that those around her had grown oblivious to her condition. I would bet most of the time she went unnoticed, like so many others who are folded in half by the weight that they bear in this world. There are two key words in this passage that are worth noting. First is the word for to bend or to be bent over, sunkupto. It only occurs here in this passage. This woman suffers because she is bent double, but her pain is more than physical. At the beginning of the passage, Luke writes that she's bent over by a disabling spirit for 18 years. So not only is her body bent over, but this woman's spirit is also broken. Despairing from years of not being seen and not being able to see others. Which makes the second word all the more interesting. Anakupto means to straighten up or to look up, but it also means to be cheered. Isn't that wonderful? This whole story is not just about a physical healing. It is about redemption, body and soul. About not only being seen, but about being regarded as the way you truly are, as who you were made to be. In the Jeremiah reading that Janice read for today, we get that wonderful story about Jeremiah questioning whether he could really be the one that God is calling. I am only a boy, he says. And yet God sees Jeremiah. God regards him for who he truly is, for who God is inviting him to be. Which is so much more than only this or only that. God doesn't let any limitation hide someone because God sees us and God saw him. No matter how much we try to hide behind those justs and those onlys that we put up around ourselves. In March of this past year, the Handel and Haydn Society of Boston was preparing for their spring concert. The H&H Society, as it is called, is one of the oldest performing arts groups in the entire country. And you can imagine that the usual attendees of this performance are what one might call rather highbrow. It is a posh group of people, intellectually sharp and emotionally restrained. One of the longtime supporters of the H&H Society, Stephen Matten, decided that he wanted to bring his 9-year-old grandson, who loves music, to the concert. His grandson is on the autism spectrum, and rarely ever says a word, but he knew that he would enjoy hearing this performance. By all accounts, it was one of the greatest performances that the group had ever done. It was breathtakingly perfect, people said. And as the final notes were played, the audience just sat there with tear-filled eyes, suspended in a kind of pregnant silence, when all of a sudden, into that silence, this man's autistic, nonverbal grandson shouted, "Wow!" The awe in his voice invited that entire concert hall to erupt in unrestrained applause and laughter and cheering, like they had been set free from whatever it was that had been holding them back. For weeks, the H&H Society searched for that boy. They didn't know who it was who had said wow that night. But the president posted on social media looking for him, saying it was one of the most wonderful moments that he had ever experienced in a concert hall. And it goes back to that Greek word, anakupto, to be cheered, to be set free from whatever it is that's holding you back, and to simply be who God created you to be. The brief story in Luke is a miracle story. It's a miracle of healing, of communal seeing, of divine redemption. But it's also a story of rebuke and correction to all those gathered in the synagogue that day and in sanctuaries and in concert halls and in lecture rooms week after week. Rules and rituals, no matter how sacred, are secondary to acknowledging the human needs and the human beings in our midst, their pains, their particularities, their hurting. No matter how long our prayers or how eloquent our preaching tries to be or how large our offerings might be on any given Sunday, if we fail to notice those who are bent double in our midst, in our communities and in our world, if we neglect the call to ease all that weighs people down, then we, like that religious leader, are hypocrites. If we forget that religion was created not just for rules, but to honor and to emulate a God of mercy and justice and joy, then we are hypocrites. If we forget that Jesus came to bring redemption, not just in heaven, but here on earth, then we are hypocrites. And sometimes it takes truly seeing someone or truly hearing someone to shake us out of our hypocrisy. The voice of an awestruck child breaking the silence. Sometimes it isn't the ones that we expect, the Jeremiahs who would say, "But I'm only this," or "I'm only that," whom God has charged with anakupto, with lifting our eyes, with helping us to look up and be cheered so that we can get back to the path of following Christ. So, brothers and sisters, as we go out this week, may we listen for those voices in our midst. As we go into God's world, may we listen and may we lift our eyes that we might truly see one another as God sees us, that we might look on this world as God does, with love and with compassion and with joy. May it be so. Amen.